Right. It's a good morning and welcome to Unpacking. This is the last edition for this week. And I think it's second last edition for this month. And then of course next month, I promise you that, I told you that somebody most capable, somebody more capable than I am, will come in. Next month. So somebody more capable will come in next month. And then I will have to give the chair to him. Then I will go back to my usual, program. But before that, we are here. And let me welcome you. And let me do justice by running through the stories that we had, you know. Let me just remove these ones for now. Okay. So we had, you know, from Monday, some of you that have not been listening, this is what we spoke about on Monday. You know, and we were talking about that MSME, you know, they were asked to prove Rani Group and other, you know, MSME asked to prove Rani Group and others anti-competitive practices. So this is a country commission, the country's, you know, competition commission, which is asking the public, especially the entrepreneurs, to come out and give evidence on Rani trading and six major moving consumer goods suppliers on alleged anti-competitive behaviors. Okay? So that's what we spoke about, and we went deeper. So this is after the commission has revealed that it has decided to pursue investigation, investigating Rani Traders CC and six major FMCG suppliers following complaints from macro, small and medium enterprises alleging restrictive business practices. That's what we spoke about on Monday. And we went deeper. This was one of the stories that was on Monday. On our Monday, what is going on here? Yeah, on our Monday edition. So we went deeper by explaining competition commission's, acts and the behaviors of what Rani is doing and others. So just give me a bit of, I'm just sorting out something quickly here. Okay. So we are done with this story. That's what we did. And then we looked at the fact that they are forced to close down. Or to be bought. And then we looked at the Helau Nafidi, a complex that was opened, and then we looked at Helal Nafidi soccer or sport complex. That was it for Monday. And then on Tuesday, we looked at Ondangwa Oshikango that went without, 2 years without rail. Yeah, I mean, without a train. That's Ondangwa, Ondangwa and Oshikango Railway that went 2 years without, without a train. And then we spoke about, you know, we went deeper in this story. And then we spoke about the Prime Minister Elijah Ngurare, who says that agriculture is the foundation of Namibia's sixth national development plan and has a critical role to play in the country's development agenda. That's what we looked at. That this he was talking about when he was at the Pukiro. And then we said Ludred and Soko and Wavisbay could take on a bigger role in Namibia's economy as the country moves closer to developing its offshore oil and gas resources. That was Tuesday. And then on Wednesday was the 26th of August, right? Yebo. Then on Wednesday we talked about NIPAM and NIPAM training on protocol that aims to bridge the gap between officials of the state and journalists. We said that the clashes between journalists, state protocol and the executive protection have been the challenging factors in Africa, especially in the media space of Africa, making it difficult for both sides, you know, to carry out their work effectively. So, in order to bridge this gap between the journalists who are responsible for collecting and disseminating information to the public and the state officials who are responsible for protecting state principles, identity, and order, the Namibia Institute of Public Management Administration has capacitated state and private media practitioners on protocols, etiquette, and the rule of diplomacy. That's what we spoke about, and we said, look, journalists need to know their space. They need to understand what questions to ask where. You don't just be on the loose because you are a journalist and then you miss the mark. That's what we spoke about on Tuesday. And then yesterday we spoke about former insurance company broker Daniel Kashima, you know, and after we spoke about the whether or not there is a law that is protecting people from being robbed, because somebody has put on an investment, you know, somebody has put on an investment, and this is what happened in Metropolitan, Momentum Metropolitan, somebody's Momentum Metropolitan savings policy was invaded. This is a Ngwediva resident, Andalbert Shilongo. So, and we spoke about whether or not there are laws that if I invest money, I have a policy in your company, you are an insurance company, and I lose money, do you get to pay me back because I was paying this money? It's my investment. So it seems that there is so much silence between somebody losing money. And we said that how many Kashimas do we have that are not yet discovered? And it seems that banks and insurance companies have organized syndicates within them that are busy, you know, informing each other about, that are working also with people outside, you know, and they are informing each other about, you know, individuals' accounts who have a lot of money, and they come up with divisive plans to, you know, dubiously take that money. Now, according to court documents, $2.2 million was allegedly transferred from a savings policy of Shilongo into a non-post account in February this year. And the public prosecutor, Yokai Kangira, who told the court last month that Kashima and his co-accused all had access to this fraudulent account. This is the non-post account that they opened. Now, according to the prosecution, the $2 million that was stolen, or the $2 million stolen funds, were spent within a short period of time. Only a $200,000 was left or remained after the prosecutor general successfully obtained a high court asset preservation order over the remaining, you know, funds. A court document suggests that part of the money was used to buy three vehicles, one of which is a Mercedes-Benz C200 belonging to Kashima, which the state later seized. The vehicles reportedly was registered under a close corporation linked to a third party. So, this is what we were talking about yesterday. And this fraud Kashima is accused of allegedly involved a group of suspects who coordinated a scheme after being invited by Kashima. This is what we're talking about. That they are a syndicate inside the banks or inside insurance companies that are inviting their fellows, maybe who are professional fraudsters, and then they come up with a dubious plan to steal the money. And the question that we asked yesterday was, what is NAMFISA and Parliament and Bank of Namibia doing to solve this problem? Because some people lose money, and that money is never recovered. But I lost money that was in the bank, or I lost money that was in an insurance company. This insurance company should face some sort of penalties. They must pay my money back, or they must face a certain penalties because the money was stolen under their watch and by their employee. So, that's what we said. And yesterday I was telling you to also watch out with some activities that you do. So if you want to listen more to this, you can visit our podcast. Much detailed, a conversation is on our podcast. And then we said some 96% of the Kavango region's residents know their HIV status, while 97% are on treatment and 96% are virally suppressed. And these statistics are obtained, these statistics are contained in the Kavango East Regional Development Report, of 2025 and 2026 financial year, presenting the report to the National Assembly, to the National Council, on Tuesday, was Mukwe Constituency Councillor, that is, and the member of the National Council, that's Augusta Katembo, that said that the results put the region closer to achieving the first of the 95-95-95 Joint United Nations Program on HIV targets. The targets aim for 95% of people living with HIV/AIDS knowing their status, 95% of people with 95% of those diagnosed to be on treatment, and 95% of people on treatment achieving viral suppression. So that is, and we also said about HIV/AIDS and how America played a role in, you know, in that 95-95-95 achievement that Namibia has achieved, and Namibia becoming one of the countries, you know, among 24 countries that have achieved this in the whole world. So that's what we spoke about yesterday. That's what we talked about yesterday on Thursday, and many more, you know, other stories. And we spoke about Cornelius Chimafeni, who has conferred national hero status because of saving the twins, the nine month old twins that were thrown into the pond. So that is what we looked at yesterday. So today we are moving on with our new stories for Friday edition. I just wanted to run a little bit of a quick recap on what we have covered so that you follow. And if you want to follow more, please go to our podcast. You can just find Unpacking the Day, the programs that you want to follow. Then, of course, every program is on our podcast. Right, we are going for a short break. Then I will set my house in order, and then we start with our stories for today. Just please stay tuned. Don't change that dial, because I have something very interesting for you today on this Friday edition. Don't forget, you can also participate in the program by calling in and at 083-288-4001 when that time comes, when the lines are open. Let me set my house in order, and then we kickstart with our new stories. So, isn't it interesting that the days are very fast? You know, we were just on Monday, now we are on Friday. Today is the 28th of August. We only have 3 days to go before we say goodbye to August and welcome Mr. September or Mrs. September. We don't know the gender of months.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political, or traditional.
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 200 or 230 grams Jacob's Kronung freeze-dried instant coffee, only 169 Namibian dollars 99 each. 10 kg crystal gold rice for 146 Namibian dollars 99, and 750 grams Crystal Valley cheddar or Gouda cheese, just 108 Namibian dollars 99 each. Valid until 6 September 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's Major League birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 Namibian dollars and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any 3 participating products. WhatsApp the code on your till slip and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
Basically, any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, we are back. We are back. I've packed the lunch box for you. I don't know whether it's a lunch box or a breakfast box. You don't know. Why do you say lunchbox when you're eating breakfast from it? How does that make sense? But, yes. I have packed some food for you. I've packed some food for you that I'm about to open for you. Okay, good news, at least for Kavango. Yesterday we were in another good news for Kavango. Today we are in another good news again for our Kavango. So Kavango East has been the story. So the governor promotes food security through what he calls Governor's Garden. What was once an unused piece of land at the Kavango East Governor's Office has been transformed into a vegetable garden, providing six unemployed young people with an opportunity to work and gain agricultural skills and contribute to food security. You know, contribute what? Food security. Kavango East Governor Hamunyera Hambuka said the initiative known as the Governor's Garden was established after the office identified an unused space at his office. The initial plan was to plant long grass and to turn the area into a recreational space for visitors and staff. Okay? I think this is lawn grass, to just put a lawn there and, you know, somebody can just go and lie down on the grass and just have fun. But the governor decided, look, we cannot eat grass. So, however, Hambuka said that he decided that this land could serve a more meaningful, you know, purpose by producing food and creating opportunities for unemployed youth. The six unemployed young people were selected to start and manage the garden with training they received through the office of the president, helping them acquire the skills needed to run the project. The garden currently produces vegetables such as cabbage, onions, beetroot, spinach, and carrots. Hambuka says that the idea was also to inspire. Okay, the idea was also inspired by maize gardens he observed around, Rundu, where residents have small and, previously unused spaces around their homes. And then they turned this into productive, gardens. Hambuka said the governor's garden is intended to demonstrate to communities that available land should not remain unused when it can, contribute to food production and household livelihood. Hambuka further encouraged the residents to make better use of available land, saying gardening can help households reduce the money spent on vegetables while also creating opportunities for income generation. He said the initiative could also serve as a platform for unemployed young people to gain practical skills and eventually become self-employed through agriculture. This story was written by Anacleta Haikera. And you can go and read the full story on our paper, today's edition. You can go and read, because this one is just a short term, just a short summary. Just go and read the whole story on our paper. It's coming out. It has already come out. Please, if you don't have access to the paper, it's very simple. Just send a message on WhatsApp on 081-200-4144. They will be able to add you to the list of those that should receive the paper. So the number is 081-200-4144. That's the first number that I got in my head before the 083. So this story is not just a Kavango story. It must be an every region story. That we are complaining and we are saying we have no access to land. Access to land. We want land. We want land to produce food. Because our understanding is that it's only when you get a big piece of land, that's when you can produce. So our understandings, we think that it is only when we get a big piece of land, that's when we can start producing food. But that's not the case. Every space of land, can be used to produce something. Every piece of land can be used to produce something. So start somewhere. Because if you are not faithful in few things, you can never be faithful in many things. So if you cannot handle small things, you can never handle a big thing. So we keep making mistakes by thinking that we need a big land to produce. we think that we need a big land to produce. Just produce small. Now, if you look at the north, not only the north, or let me just say the north, from Kunene to Zambezi, now we have harvested, right? We have harvested, and now our fields are laying waste. Now, no activity, nothing, because we are waiting for rain season. We are rain season people. We are rain season dependent farmers. And most of us want to be producing mahangu only, sorghum, and that's it. And we don't want to diversify. You know, we don't want to diversify. It's not that we don't know, we know, but our mentality, we are still stuck in the past, thinking that a field is only for mahangu and all those traditional, you know, crops that we have been planting for centuries. We don't want to diversify and look at other type of crop that might be drought resistant, that don't even need a lot of water. And I'm always giving you the example of Israel. Israel is 70% desert. But they produce 70% of vegetables and, you know, in the world. How do they do that? So they have invested so much in irrigation. They have invested so much in irrigation. If you look at Japan, Japan is an island. And it doesn't have much arable land, like much fertile land. But Japan is food self-dependent, or food self, you know, they have food self-sustainability, or food self-sustained. How are they doing that? A lot of European countries have that. They don't have enough of arable land. But they produce food. And of course we can exclude Ukraine. We can exclude Russia. Because Russia has the world's most fertile land. And Ukraine, of course, but now Ukraine has lost some of those territories that had, especially the eastern part of Ukraine, that was having, let me just say, the Donbas region. That was really an agricultural hub. So, but all in all, we say that land does not need to be big. Land just need to be there, just behind your house. You can grow one or two things that you can sell, and you make an income. You can grow tomatoes. But in the north, people used to grow tomatoes, especially those smaller tomatoes, because most of those tomatoes used to be on, you know, around the house, because most of the houses used to be stock house. But now, because the houses, the courtyards are now fenced with zinc and, you know, walls, some plants are no longer, you know, friendly. They cannot germinate anymore, because some plants used to be to germinate, and they are around the, you know, house poles. Even the calabashes, that's how they used to be planted. They just used to be planted around the house. And they grow. And they bear fruit. So now we don't have the calabash type of, you know, the calabash anymore because of the change in the construction dynamics. So every region should copy what Kavango is doing. But, you know, in those days, I don't know now, if you go to Katima, those days, in every yard, there is, you know, vegetable. There is a garden. In every yard, there is a garden. And even if you go to the villages, you will find that every yard, there is a garden. I didn't know that you can buy potatoes. Things like carrots, onions, potatoes, you know, cabbage, tomatoes, spinach. I didn't know they can be bought. Because when I was in the village, we just used to go and get. So when I went to Katima, to my uncle's house, a town, that's where I could hear people to go and buy tomatoes. And that's what angered my grandmother. Because when I went there, I found my grandmother there. And then people were going to buy tomato, going to buy cabbage. And my grandmother was like, what? Is this how you are living here in this so-called towns of yours? That you buy everything from a match to, you know, to tomato. No, take me back to the village. I don't want this madness. Because to my aunt, to my grandmother, that was really madness. How do you buy tomato? So to my grandmother, it was madness. She couldn't even understand it, that how on earth do you buy tomato when you have this big space here? Why don't you plant your own tomato? And then my uncle will say, no, you know, water here, you know, water where. You see, they will explain to say, no, water in town, you need to pay for water. It's a village there, we dig wells, we have free water. Then my grandmother said, then what are you looking for here? What are you doing, what are you doing here? Why are you not just going back to the village? Of course, it was a terrible logic. Because he is working. He needs to be near his work. So, but you understand what I'm saying. That at the village, we were not buying onions, tomatoes. I didn't know there was a price for potato. Seriously. Because potato to us was like potatoes, sweet potatoes, cassava, those things to us. Those things were like going into you know, they were like wild fruits. You don't buy. You don't buy those things. Yeah, but in town things are different. You have a water bill. So you have a water bill, so to minimize that, you don't need to have a lot of, you know, things. Like, you know, things like bananas. Ah. Bananas, we just grew up, you know, eating those things. I didn't even know that those things can be bought. Bananas, pawpaws, all those things. I didn't know they can be bought. Seriously. Yeah. But, you know, the problem is, in the early 90s, at the school where I grew up with, I grew up around the school premises because my parents were teachers. Now, how do you call this word? Eh? How do you pronounce it? It always kicks me. The pupils. Yeah, pupils. I have to be taught how to pronounce that. The pupils will be taught gardening. They'll be taught how to plant and how to deal with. And it was, there were orchards, you know, around the school. In that school, that orchard was just built by the teachers and learners. The gardens, we never used to make anything at all, nothing. If you go to Katima, you're just going to buy maybe bread. But even bread, we stopped buying bread because there was a community project that was making bread. I think it was around 95 when they started making, they make some stove that I don't know how it used to work with charcoals, and they were making bread there. So we lacked nothing in the 90s. Nothing. I can tell you, we lacked nothing. Whether it is sugar cane, whatever, and except what we didn't know, what was not exposed to us. But all these, you know, cabbage, you know, Chinese cabbage, which the Zimbabweans call tsunga, or, you know, we call it sugarloaf. Yeah, we used to call it sugarloaf. So that Chinese cabbage. And then there is what the type of spinaches that is, you know, chamoria, rep, 5 years. The 5 years was introduced to us by the Zimbabweans that came with it from Zimbabwe. We only had the rep and chamoria. So, but when 5 years was introduced, because 5 years is just a nickname to say you can eat from one plant for 5 years. That's what it calls. That's why they call it 5 years. We planted that, and indeed it is 5 years. You can eat from that plant. Once you plant it, you only plant it once, and you'll be eating from it for 5 years. That's a spinach type of. And then there's this common spinach now. That one was also introduced to us later on. The one teacher bought it, and everybody tasted it, and it was nice. And then they started planting it in the village. The village garden. But the government, my goodness. The government. How many times did I call it? 3 times. The government came in with their laws, and they destroyed, spoiled everything. Even this manual, you know, manual work must stop. It's corporal punishment. And then children became useless and unproductive. From there, our education really fell apart. Now, you have people that are just taught theory, no practical, nothing. You see? Nothing. The government killed it all. Because I can tell you, even the drums, like the traditional drums, they used to be made by school kids. They are taught how to carve wood and make a canoe or make a pounding, you know, a mortar. All those things were stopped. They were taught even how to construct a traditional house a traditional room, they were taught a lot of things. And because sometimes you find people from the village, the old men and old women that will be called from by the school to come and teach the students how to, you know, weave baskets, how to make traditional baskets, how to make traditional pots. All those things were taught in school. It was manual work, like how to knit, you know. They were taught knitting, that was called needlework, okay, and woodwork. That was part of home economics. I did home economics, but because we only started focusing on cooking. So that's where I love cooking, because of home economics. Because in home economics those days, they just give you the recipe. They give you the ingredients, and they give you the recipe and the methods and measuring cups, everything. And then they say, on your marks, get set, go. The stove is in front of you. You know how many degrees of heat the whatever you are cooking should be on. And you set the stove. If you are baking, for example, you set it. If it is 60 minutes on 120 degrees, that is what it should be. It should not surpass that. And you see, I used to pass that subject. So, but the government spoiled everything. Because the government then, you know, we were trying to please the international community by ratifying a lot of laws that are useless. We were trying to impress the international community. Of course, that was needed at that time because, you know, you need a lot of help. We just inherited a 7 billion rand GDP that time. So that's our GDP in 1990. It was just 7 billion rand, $7 billion by today. Maybe by $7 billion, you know, maybe it was more, maybe it can be equivalent to 21 billion today. But the GDP of Namibia by 1990, it was 7 billion rand. Okay? So that was Namibia's GDP, 7 billion rand. And that is what the government started with. And now we are talking about $200 billion in GDP. And maybe it might grow higher. So, the government spoiled everything. And now we have a lot of young people that don't know what they don't, they cannot do anything. You have a lot of teachers that cannot even dig a garden. People were taught this thing from art. You know, art involved singing. You know, traditional, traditional dancing. And people will be taught. There will be a lady, an old lady from the village they hired to come and train people how to dance. And, you know, it was really education. That's what used to be called education. Because you are taught on multiple front. But this education that we have is not teaching anyone anything. It's a memory-based education where you just memorize the theory and nothing practical is there. So that's why even if you see that people that say, okay, I'm an intern and, you know, I want to come, you sometimes wonder, okay, this person is in the third year university, is studying media. But it seems that It's not even in the third year. It's like you are teaching a grade 10 somewhere or grade 12. I'm not demeaning universities, but that is the reality. And that's why most people that are graduating today cannot be employed. The reality is most people that are graduating today cannot be employed because their skills are not in line. What they know and what is required in the job market, they are not aligning. They are not in sync. So our education has gone way off. It has really gone off. So I'm sure I've a little bit gone away from the topic, but I'm just telling you that those days gardening was the talk of the day, like in the environment where I grew up. That even myself as a small boy, I was taught how to dig, and I loved planting. I love planting. It was a passion that was instilled in children those days. A passion that when it is weekend, people wake up and they are going into the field. It is done. That is done with a passion because that's already part of their lifestyle. Until the government started to redefine things, apparently it's corporal punishment. It is corporal punishment, and things died. Now you have a lot of young people with soft hands, with a very powerful, bombastic, discombobulating, bombastic, lumberious words of English, but they cannot do anything practical, anything beyond the English, you know, vocabulary. Nothing. You have people who are speaking English and it is even coming through the nose, but they cannot do any work. So that's the type of education that we have. No wonder we are talking about young people that are graduating that cannot be employed. Because we are teaching theory. And even that theory itself is even not in line with what is required in the job market. That's why I keep saying that let's let the government come down. The government is in the stratosphere. So if there is any prayer that we need to pray, it's not against road accidents. Let's first pray for the government to come back. Because the government right now, the government is not with us. The government is not with us. The government is in the stratosphere. Or maybe they are already in Jupiter. They are too high. Let them come down. That is the only prayer that we need to pray. Not more praying for, against car accidents. Because car accident is not a spiritual problem. Car accident is a mentality problem. How is it that you have countries with worse road conditions and they are the lowest in car accidents? And Namibia having the most, you know, advanced and most connected, most smooth, most clean, you know, roads in Africa, powerful road network. And Namibia is the highest. Why is that? It's a mentality problem. It's not a spiritual issue. It's not a prayer issue. the prayer that we need to pray for our education to come back to earth. Because our education is not on earth. Our education is not on earth. It is in the stratosphere, or maybe in Jupiter's sphere, or in Pluto's sphere. We killed a very important aspect that was supposed to be in every child in Namibia. We cannot talk about food self-sustainability if our mentality is not agricultural. You cannot talk about food self-sustainability if your mentality is against agriculture. Let's go for a short break and we come back.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
You see, government officials and opposition officials, you have one thing in common. You like making political statements that are very much empty. The issue of food self-sustainability is a mentality problem. It is not that we are not able to be sustainable. We are. We are. And we can. In fact, we can do it even without a cent, without having spent any cent at all. That takes a mentality. Namibian mentality is not agricultural. That is the problem. And we killed that aspect that was supposed to have helped us, because that was supposed to instill a mentality in every school going child. By this time, we could have been speaking a different language. Because Zambezi itself, Kavango, those are two regions that have powerful, arable, fertile, whatever you can talk about, good land for agriculture. Why is it that you still have people, you know, receiving a drought relief, program? I mean, food. It is a mentality. It is a mentality. We had this mentality in the 90s. And this is a mentality that has been in our parents, in our forefathers. It was transformed and to be transferred to school But the government said it was corporal punishment, and corporal punishment was overemphasized, over-exaggerated, misunderstood, misinterpreted, and then everything became chaotic, as we see today. So, now, we cannot even make toothpicks when we have regions that are rich with timber. And we cannot make toothpick. We buy toothpicks from South Africa. Or even getting a coffin. We cannot make coffins. You want to tell me that we cannot make a coffin in Namibia? We can. But if you start making a coffin and you submit it, a government official will sit on that project and will never succeed with it. You come up with a project that is viable, feasible, somebody will come in, sit on it. Because the mentality is anti-agriculture. So it is not, nobody is stopping us from becoming food self-sustainable. Nobody. We are stopping ourselves. We have stopped ourselves. I grew up in Zambia because my uncle was, I used to go to Zambia to my uncle's house. So the mentality in Zambia is different. Like in that time when I was very young, but I don't know how I understood, you know, what I'm about to say now. One day I woke up and it was in a town called Mazabuka at my aunt's house. Because we used to go to Zambia because my parents believed that Zambian hospitals were better with dealing with eyes. So I woke up one morning, and I thought to myself that in this house, if no one makes a plan, nothing is going to be eaten today. So in Zambia, you need a plan every day. At least that time, maybe now it has changed. Things have changed now. But in Zambia those days, for you to eat, you need a plan, to have a plan for the day. If you don't have a plan, forget about eating. And luckily, that day, there was no plan. And we were sitting, waiting, no plan, nothing. They tried all they can, nothing. Nada. Hey. Then it was my father that noticed, and he has to speak in Subia so that nobody understands. And he told my mother to say, look, it seems these guys have no plan today. So, and then my parents, you know, went and bought food. Yeah. That's when we could eat. So when there's no plan, because other countries, they are not taught the way we are taught. Here in Namibia, we are taught that government will do everything. We are told that the government, everything, government, 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 government. In other countries, it's not like that. If you don't stand and, you know, try by yourself, you will die of hunger. No government is coming. Once you see government coming, it's maybe when the United Nations have, you know, raise the concern about starvation in a certain place, that's when you see governments, you know, wanting to act out of embarrassment in many countries. But in Namibia, the government is on automation. So in Namibia, the good thing about the government in Namibia is on automation. Like, the government does not wait for another agency to come and declare flood wherever. Mm-mm, the government is the one that declares flood. There is flood somewhere. They mobilize immediately. They dispatch teams to go and assess the situation on the ground. And immediately the office of the prime minister is already mobilizing, you know, and immediately they are even getting rice from South Korea. So that's how automatic the government here in Namibia is. And that's something commendable that we need to commend. We need to talk about it. You know, and we cannot just be critical of the government. We should point, where they are doing well, and we commend them and congratulate them. So, in other countries, not like that. In other countries, government acts out of embarrassment. You know, they act out of pressure. But in Namibia, should it be heard that there is something going on in Omaheke immediately? You know, it's like the Namibian government is competing at some point with journalists. Before the journalist could respond, the government is already on the ground. So, and in many countries, it is not so. You need to go to Chad, go to Burundi, you need to go to Central African Republic, and you go to Mali, and you see it for yourself. And then when you come back, you will come back appreciating Namibia. You will come back, you will come back with a different view about Namibia. So, but we have killed a very important aspect of skill development that used to be instilled in school-going children by the so-called, by introducing so-called rights. And the good thing about democracy is that you can talk about it all you want. You can talk about the rights and all you want, but you don't eat it. It will never transform into food that you eat. It will also never transform into money that you can spend. And this is by design. Countries that introduced democracy to you, human rights, they are not talking about those human rights things. They are acting differently. That's why they are ahead. And that's why we will keep being called a third world. Because this world is a world of hearers. The world of hearers and memorizers. It's not a world of doers and actors. Because the first world cannot afford Africa to be a doer and an actor. If Africa wakes up and becomes a doer and an actor, it's game over for everyone. Because no one is able to compete with Africa, number one. When it comes to manpower, we have the strength. No one is stronger than a black person in this world. If you compete with a black person in sports, he will win. You compete with him in a boxing, he will win. So a black person is only misplaced. But should he find his path and stand up correctly, it is going to be game over for everyone. You can challenge, you can bet me on that one. I'm not being racial or whatever. I'm just being realistic. When it comes to manpower, no one can match us. But we are wasting that manpower into, you know, theory. We have the strength to sit for hours just to be taught theory, theoretical junk that will never translate into finances, into money or into food. How do you go and study agriculture and you are not, you don't even know how to plant a, what agriculture is that? So, we have exaggerated rights and it have helped us to kill the aspect of, you know, skills, practical skills. And that is, but what Kavango is doing, what the governor's office in Kavango is doing is commendable. Yeah, six young people have an opportunity now to, you know, to do work. They also have, they are creating opportunities. Because they got some skills from the office of the president and they are using that now. So that's commendable for the young people. It is 24 minutes to 8 and we get into our second story for today. We are talking about the most interesting story now, because this story led to the ousting of a president. This story led to the destruction of a presidency in a country. We are talking about cocoa's future in Africa and the burden around the crop. Not only the burden, it's a curse around the crop. This story was written by Dwight Links. You can find the full story in our today's paper. A recent webinar that was exploring the prospects and the untapped potential of the cocoa value chain in Africa singled out that in fact infrastructure was the single most common hurdle that is identified. The discussion was organized by the LEAF organization based in Nigeria, which is an organization promoting, you know, Pan-African stories. You can go and read the full story. Cocoa is not about infrastructure. You know, we know why cocoa is not translating into a finished product in Africa. We know why. It's not really about lack of infrastructure. Not just a diplomatic excuse. But the truth is, cocoa is the reason why Laurent Gbagbo was messed up in Cote d'Ivoire. If you talk about cocoa, you will be cocoed. So if you talk about cocoa, you will be cocoed by your so-called masters, because they have established a limit, what I called a mental delimitation commission, to dismember whoever tries to produce cocoa or turn it into a finished product in Africa. That one is not even something that we can hide. Laurent Gbagbo is an example, or is the example of what I'm talking about. The reason why San Ouattara is a president today, why? It's because of cocoa. Because in the early 2010 or 2009, Laurent, proposed a 60-40 way other way around. Because how is it that we are producing cocoa and we are getting 40% and France is getting 60%? How is it? How is that? He wanted to turn it around and it costed his chair as a president. So, it's not infrastructure. That's not true. Infrastructure can be established. People can establish infrastructure to produce, but it is permission. You are not allowed to do that. Especially French colonies. You know what I'm talking about. You are not allowed to do that. If you are debating with me, go and ask Mari. The reason why we have the juntas today is because they wanted beneficiation of their minerals. France was taking a lot of uranium and they were buying it at a cheaper price from Niger, Mali and Burkina Faso, those countries. So today we have military juntas in there because they will realize that, look, the problem is not really France. The problem is the current government that is here, because they are the pipeline of France. So for us to deal with France, we need to destroy its pipeline. We need to destroy its satellite, because this government is a satellite of France. They are serving France, instead of saving the Malian, Nigerian, and the Burkina Faso, citizens. Whether or not that is correct to have made a coup, that's your argument. But the issue is, the issue in Africa is not an infrastructural issue. The issue in Africa is not infrastructural. The problem is not that infrastructure. You can get infrastructure. The problem is that you might get infrastructure, but the market, you don't have the market, because the market is controlled by who? The market is controlled by who? Who is controlling the market? That is where it becomes problematic. And if they see that you somewhat have the market, well, the only thing is to send the military to come and summarize you or edit you. That's the only thing that is there. So, Africa knows this very well. And especially African leaders, they know this very well. And they understand it very well. That's why when an African leader is sworn in to power, the first trip he takes is where? He needs to go to Europe. To the big boss. So, African leaders know this very well. They have seen others being edited and being summarized, and they know what it is. It only takes a bold person. But no matter how bold you are, you will not have a market to sell that which is you are producing. But there is good news. The good news is that the multipolarity of the world that is now, the world that is becoming multipolar now, there is good news. Because Europe is now losing the grip over Africa. Because the mistake Europe keeps making and is coming to Africa and try to lecture Africans how they should run their states. That type of lecturing is what is making most African leaders tired. And, you know, that's where China is coming in. Because China doesn't care about how you run your state as long as they have space to do business. They don't really care because they have a non-interference policy. They don't interfere in government's internal affairs. Except maybe if it is threatening Chinese interests. But Europe wants to come to Africa and be the lecturer. Lecturing everyone on what they themselves cannot practice. So, and Africa is now getting tired of European hypocrisy. Where Europe is refusing to man up and take responsibility for the atrocity they committed in Africa. And yet they want to force other, you know, African leaders to be brought before tribunal and be tried because of, you know, apparently acts that were done against humanity, when Europe is the best in that practice. And they cannot bring themselves to book. So that is hypocrisy. And it's very loud. So when it comes to production of cocoa or processing of cocoa into chocolate, Mugabe was talking about it, but he himself could not do it. Well, you can say, no, Mugabe doesn't have cocoa. Zimbabwe doesn't really have cocoa. If Zimbabwe had cocoa in abundance, you could have been eating chocolate from Zimbabwe right now, made in Zimbabwe. So, and Mugabe was the only, you know, leader in Africa that could even walk out and, you know, tell the Europeans. But Mugabe is now gone. And, well, Gaddafi was trying, but Gaddafi was having a lot of problems. Because Gaddafi, his mentality was a problem. That is why, you know, many African leaders started to, you know, run away from him. Because he was having, his mentality was to rule over Africa. He wanted to be the one to rule over Africa. And this started in the 60s, in the 1963 and 1965 there, when they were talking about the unity of Africa and it was really, you know, being spoken about. And these countries were getting independent, like Kenya, you know, Nigeria, Tanzania, and other countries, you know, were getting independent. And saying, now, let us unite and make one country. These countries like, people like, you know, Julius Nyerere and Jomo Kenyatta were like, please, can you wait? Can we do it gradually? Because they perceived that West African and North African blocs, they wanted to be the ones to rule over Africa. And you already know that once power falls in a West African, hand, it is game over. And that game over will only escalate and end up into chaos. So a lot of leaders in East Africa decided, they were reading the guys, and they found out the mentality that, no, it was a dangerous mentality, a self-gratification mentality. And that's why the unity of Africa as a state failed miserably, because it was driven by personal agendas. So in 2010 or 20, Gaddafi calls a meeting, and he wanted to be the king of kings. You can go and hear about it more from the king, King Shumba of Ondonga. He was the one that was narrating the story. And you can go and hear. That clip is on YouTube. He wanted to be the king of kings and maybe lord of lords in Africa. So, the problem in Africa is not infrastructure. What is, stopping people from producing finished product is not into Africa, is not an infrastructure issue. It's a permission issue. Are you allowed to do that? You see, who has a final say? But like I said, now the world is becoming at least better. Because now we have a lot of players that are coming in, and superpowers have been proven that they are superpowers, yes, but conventionally, with conventional warfare, superpowers can be bogged down. America is bogged down with Iran because Trump wanted to prove to Putin that he was not a paper tiger, that he could go into Iran, do the work, and win immediately and come back. Well, it has proven to be wrong. So, Trump has joined Putin into paper tigerness. Two superpowers are now bogged down into two wars. Of course, you can say Ukrainians are fighting hard and the Iranians are fighting hard. But the issue is, it is the two superpowers that are fighting in Ukraine and in Iran. So, Trump didn't know that Putin has put a snare in Iran. And Putin did not know that America has put a snare in Ukraine. So now, it's a lock-to-lock chaotic battles that are fought in two fronts, two powers. So conventionally, you don't just start a war and you think you can win. The thing was tactical. America and Israel were tactical in Iran. They wanted to get in, decapitate and decorticate the leadership into pieces like onions, and then leave it all to the citizens of Iran to finish up, and it did not work. When they did a decorticating strike, the Iranian citizens rallied behind the government. They wanted to trust the Kurds, the Balochis, that were, you know, minority tribes, the, you know, the Azaris and the Arabs. But the Arabs, the Azaris, the Balochis, the Kurds united with the Persians, which are the majority, around their government. So, the multipolarity of the world is a benefit to at least Africa, because now Africa will have the right to choose partners. You can have multiple partners right now. You can still work with the Americans. Because the Americans, in as much as they can be devils, they are also angels. It's the same with the Europeans. Is a devil and angel at the same time. And in fact, all superpowers are like that. So it just depends on how you negotiate. And yeah, it just depends on how you negotiate. So I think Gbagbo was too tactical. You are supposed to be strategic. Just go to France and say, France, can you set up a factory in Côte d'Ivoire that makes chocolate? And then you give us a stake in that business. We get 20%. And then you keep buying to say, okay, France, we now can afford to buy at another 20%. And you keep buying it. By this time, you could have a 60-40. So it just depends on how you negotiate. If you become tactical, you will be tactically dealt with. You must be strategic. And we are good at tactics and not at strategy. That is why our things fail and end up into our toppling. Because you just wake up and you say, 50-50 from now on, and you are a minister. From now on, whatever will be 50-50. It is a political story. That's tactical. That's tactics. And you are not strategic. So at the end of the day, the president will fire you, because the president also gets under pressure. They say, hey, what are you talking about there? No, that's just a minister. Okay, so correct that mistake. So immediately, the minister is gone. Because Africa still reports to Europe. That is the truth that you people need to know. It's not about cocoa infrastructure in Africa. That's a problem. Nope. It is permission to produce chocolate, which is not coming. And you know from whom that permission should come, because you have Francophone and Anglophone, Commonwealth, whatever. You have that. So, at least Commonwealth is silent. Because Britain, I can really say Britain has an organized way of, you know, power. The British power is organized. The British will not come so much violent on you. They will organize your toppling far. And they tried that with Zimbabwe and they failed. Because Britain was no longer interested in open war with any country, especially during the matured prime ministers like, you know, Tony Blair, David Cameron, and the prime ministers before. They were no longer interested in open war. What Boris Johnson, Theresa May, not Theresa May, but Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and Rishi Sunak, and now Andy Burnham, what they are doing is reckless. That's not what Britain is known of or is known for. So what they are now doing, you know, provoking a war with Russia, that is really reckless from their side. But the British were not in those days interested in open conflict. You know, they will say one or two rhetorics here and there, but that just ends there. So that's why Mugabe could have been kept for. You know, they could have just gone into Zimbabwe and, you know, toppled him, like what France did in Cote d'Ivoire. France just went in, took Gbagbo out, and Alassane Ouattara was installed. So France can go there and do that. And America will not say anything. So America will not say anything to, was not going to say anything to Britain if Britain went into Zimbabwe to topple Mugabe. But the British were matured enough not to have done that. So we can say that the Commonwealth, you know, an Anglophone bloc is the most stable bloc. We can say that with certainty. But we need to know that the cocoa in Africa is not just a burden, it is a curse. And we don't talk about infrastructure as a problem. Infrastructure is not a problem. The problem is the permission. Do you have permission to produce cocoa, to process cocoa into chocolate? Do you have that permission? The issue is not infrastructure. The issue is permission. Do you have that permission? Who allowed you to do that? Who allowed you to produce, to process cocoa into chocolate? Who? You see, that's why even this issue of Angolan fuel. Angolan fuel is not that Angolan oil is bad. It doesn't, you know, it will destroy cars. That's not true. The issue is, in whose carrier is your economy? The issue is, Namibia is South Africa's girlfriend. Period. Namibia, Botswana, Lesotho, Eswatini, they are married in a polygamous economic marriage by South Africa. And their marriage certificate is SACU. So that Namibia buying oil from Angola, that's a cheating. Namibia is economically cheating on South Africa. So you don't just trade. There is a, in SACU, you don't just make a business agreement with any country without South Africa's permission. So SACU is a marital certificate, is an economic marriage certificate, which Namibia, Botswana, Lesotho, and Eswatini are the wives. So you can make your political statements all you want and say, you know, Angolan cars are, Angolan oil is what. Angolan oil is what. That's of course what the lay person can understand. But the truth is, Namibia is into a polygamous marital affair, economic polygamous marital affair with South Africa. And that will never be broken. It's till death do them part. So you need to understand that. So let's go for a short break. We come back and we continue with our last story. I don't know why time is flying today. Oh, no, it's because I started late. Yes. Okay. My apologies for starting late. I was, you know, it was traffic problem. But let's go for a short break and we are back with our last story.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
You see, you guys that are single, you don't understand how marriage works. You know, when South Africa announces repo rate, what happens? Namibia will also jump to announce their repo rate. Because not only that the Namibian dollar is pegged to the South African rand, which means the Namibian economy is on South Africa's back. It is carried Monvikwa, yeah, South Africa. Yeah? The economy of Namibia, Imatari, South Africa. So you need to understand that. But South Africa so far has been a good husband, I think, to all his wives. So we need to, commend South Africa for that. He's been a good husband. So if Namibia deals with Angola without South Africa's knowledge, that is a cheating. It's an economic cheating. And, you know, that's extramarital affair. And that's a serious case. So you people that are single, you will not understand this. Let me go to the next story. But that's how it is. The capital city of marriage is a bedroom. That's where all decisions are made. So where is Namibia's bedroom? Pretoria. The rest you know. And if you didn't know, you need to know now. Cape Town. Or the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. That's a bedroom of both Namibia, Botswana, Lesotho, Eswatini. That's where they go and report. Alright, so we get into, but of course, 083-238-401, that's a number in studio if you want to be part of the conversation for the stories that we have covered so far. It's a Friday morning. Don't worry about everything. You guys even knocked off at, you know, on Tuesday you knocked off early. Why are you so waked up? Huh? The Prime Minister said public servants should knock off early to go and prepare for themselves for the Heroes Day. You guys knocked off early, so you don't need to be worried. Your face does not need to be tense when you enter the office. All right, so there are claims of tribal favoritism in the promotion of of teachers, okay, claims of tribal favoritism in the promotion of teachers has come under spotlight with the parliamentary committee calling for fair diversity and merit in the appointment of teachers to senior positions. The Teachers Union of Namibia, TUN, raised concern that tribal favoritism in promotion has resulted in an unequal representation in senior positions in some regions. The National Council Standing Committee on Education, Science, Information and Communication Technology, and then Youth Development has acknowledged the concern, but cautioned that, you know, such claims should be supported by statistics. The committee chairperson, Bethwell Shaveonja, revealed this last week during the National Council sessions while tabling the report. The report was adopted on 21st August following the role player engagement held at Ochwarongo from the 6th to the 10th July this year. He said Namibian law does not restrict appointments to restrict appointments of people from specific regions, and stressed that he stressed the need to balance inclusivity and diversity with merits. I like this one. Balance inclusivity and diversity with what? With merits. With merits and good performance. So don't just look at inclusivity. Don't just look at equality. Don't just look at diversity. Look at merits and good performance when you're employing. The concerns are among several challenges the committee found to be affecting teachers and the quality of education. Okay. Allegation of tribal favoritism. That principals are, you know, involved in employing people of certain tribes over, you know, preferences over other tribes. Well, the problem with tribalism is embedded in our cultures. And tribalism, tribal stereotypes, is what our parents taught us. Let us be honest now. No, let us be honest. Our parents engraved that tribal stereotype mentality in us all. If you go to the north, the Ngajeras are saying a different story about everyone. And everyone says Ngajeras, they steal. And everyone says the Kwambis are arrogant and rude and very proud. Then everyone says Mbalantus, they are very proud and they are, you know, they like prestigious life. They like high life. They in fact, they don't live a life. They live a perception, apparently. And then somebody say Kwanyamas are euphemistic. They are they don't tell the truth. In fact, do not even trust what they say because they don't mean what they say. They say what they don't mean and they mean what they don't say.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
So, Kwanyama's alliance, apparently, and they like inheriting. And apparently Ndongas like power, and they are always associated with witchcraft. Especially apparently Ndonga women, they bewitch men. So that Kwaludhi's, you know, are backward and Mbajas and Kolonkadhis. So that's the Oshiwambo tribal stereotype. And it is embedded in everyone. Then we even graduate more higher. You know, the people from Zambezi are known with what? Associated with witchcraft. That they are the gurus when it comes to Tokolosh, the masters. And then we have, you know, Damaras that are associated with, you know, alcohol and drugs with coloreds. And then Hereros are said to be proud. It's a tribal stereotype that we have been, it is common. And these are the people that are coming from houses and they are becoming principals tomorrow. So with this mentality, it is not difficult for you to be tribally motivated when it comes to your employment. And that's a bad side about it. But the good side about this is that morning.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Franz. How are you?
Yes.
Good. I've got three issues. Quickly.
Yeah, please, quick.
Thank you for summarizing the lessons for all those days, even those who were not present, at least we could to get some understanding. And the other thing that I want to say, you mentioned about to have multiple friendship. And I think that statement similar to the policy that I hear pronounced by most of our leaders, that we are a friend to all and not enemy to all, something of that nature, which you also highlighted a few days ago, that you cannot be a friend to associate yourself to only one person or one group of people or a country. Hence, I was mentioning about you cannot serve two masters. So it appears that we have got to neutrality. The neutrality is also there, which you were saying that we both agree that it's not possible. But I think it's actually possible. Maybe it's a new approach of doing things. So that you don't, you can always accommodate everyone. Maybe when they come into your culture, you also accept them. Not that they will forget about their culture or their way of doing things, but just to adapt to the prevailing culture so that you can have that strong social cohesion. So now maybe also the teachers, if we, for example, they are appointed, maybe on merit, because they have the qualities and the competency, but then I agree with you when you say maybe cultural diversity or issues of that nature, I don't know how we can approach that, because I hear a lot of people, even some days ago, years ago, maybe Pendugeni, Uraitana, she was, I think, overseeing in her leadership somewhere in Zimbabwe, I mean, Zambezi. But people were complaining. She doesn't know the culture, she doesn't understand what all this, the language and things like that. And I was also surprised a bit why people are against that, this appointment. So the other issue is on the culture. I mean, not culture, but agriculture. So I think, I don't know where we have failed, and I don't think it's maybe the school system. Maybe the parents, the way we are bringing up our children, we are not also exposing them to food security, food insecurity. Because we used to do that. We used to, all houses, just like you say, the people never used to go and buy potatoes or whatever. Even in our households here, in the community, we used to do that. So that I was surprised when I came from exile, almost every house doesn't have those things. No potatoes, I mean, no cassava, no sweet potatoes, nothing. Everything you have to buy. Is it the system of this, the school, or I know this education includes those three components. The informal education, which had to start from home, I think is the one that is failing there, and not necessarily formal education structure. And the last one is on the issue of driving. I think the Honorable Nekund is doing a very great job, and I believe today some of those stakeholders, they are also having some kind of meeting to engage whether the problem is starting from maybe the school, what is it, driving schools, or is it just our attitude, our behavior, which I believe is the cause of most of this accident, despite the fact that we have got good roads. If some program can be focusing on the behavior change, then those programs are always neglected in most of the institutions, behavior change. And this one has to do with our mentality, like you said, the way we look at issues, our behaviors, whether it's towards towards pedestrian or other drivers, colleagues, and all these other things. Our attitude needs to be addressed. And the people who are dying there, most of the time, most of the most people who are dying there are men, especially the young men who have got those fancy cars, and you know, they are fat, and they are, you know, so and they are the one who are dying. And people, if you go to motor vehicle accident, there are reports there that even women are complaining in the radios. That no, we are just becoming now single parents, single widow, whatever. Our men are dying, the father of our children are dying. All this kind of problem that we are creating ourselves. So, Dr. Franz, I think I've
been. Thank you very much. Yes. Now, from the good side of things, though, there are, you know, I think what we are failing to do, we are failing to identify what each tribe is good at and can contribute to our development. So when it comes to education, it shouldn't just be a diversity thing, because we need to have all tribes. Yeah, we cannot have all Vambos in a school. No, it shouldn't be like that. If all Vambos that are in school are performing, what's the problem with that? So if you have all Hereros in an office and they are doing their job, what's the problem with that? So I think we need to move away from this tribal immaturity and look at the bigger picture. Because the bigger picture is always there. We are so much engulfed in this tribal immaturity. We need to recognize that there are certain things that this tribe is just good at. This. And let the tribe take a lead in that. It should be merit. We need to look at the issue looking at meritocracy and performance. Not really about inclusivity and diversity. I hate these two words. You know what? Because we have abused them and they have lost meaning. We cannot be inclusive in everything. Inclusivity and diversity should not replace merit and good performance. Because you can have diversity and it does not mean people will perform better when there is inclusivity. Does that mean that is what makes people perform better? No. We need to look at merits. We need to look at merits. That there is no restriction in Namibia that when a job is advised, it is advertised in Karas. There is no law that dictates that people in Karas should only be the one to apply. There is no such a law. We are in Namibia and anybody can apply for a job anywhere. This is a unitary state and it doesn't belong to any tribe. So we need to grow up from this tribal, immaturity. Anything, I know, it is tribally motivated. It was tribally motivated. See, we need to understand that it's not really about merits. I mean, about inclusivity and diversity. It is also about merit and good performance. I think I will agree with the chairperson, Mr. Betwell. Let me just get his name. Well, where is it? Let me look for his name. I don't want to mispronounce his name. Chaveonja. Yes. Mr. Betwell Chaveonja. He's saying there must be claims must be proven. Let me just get them. Okay. Here it is. So, there's Namibian law does not restrict appointment to people from a specific region. And then it states the need to balance inclusivity and diversity with merits and good performance. And, he cautioned that such claims should be supported with statistics. It should be, it should be supported with statistics. How many tribes, how many of the dominant tribes that we are talking about, that they are dominating. For example, if you find, I lived among the Oshawamba people for a long time, for more than 20 years. In fact, half of my life. Then they don't choose what type of work if there is any work opportunity, they move. They want to work. So other tribes are sort of choosy the type of work they want to work. So if you find...
Rimonenea kololo internet yendelela, to iturirwa moshari. Ove, toko pifanata ngoshimaru ashifike pedola danamibio maaveja avari na mafeleja atano. Okujame fikula tetela aguste, fio mama fikwede milongo natuwa septemba. Itoka pulo ufuto shimaru ashonumba, okuturirwa mwea kololo engenge, oeli shangifo kontrakta keshe yo Peratus Fiber, ile Skyfi. Oto turirwa mwea kulo ripelo internet. Kupifa fio pedola danamibio maaveja avari na mafeleja atano. Omeumbo ilo mongeshefa, ea kulo only nongushu. Talela po peratus.africa /Namibia. Nde toli shangifanena.
So if you find a dominant Oshwambo tribe in a certain work, you don't necessarily automatically ascribe it to tribally motivated employment. There are other factors that leads to that, and one of which is what I'm telling you now. They don't choose the type of job. They take any job available. They don't care where the job is. So that is, but other tribes do. They choose the type of work they want, and they choose where they want to work. So will you blame it on the one that does not choose just because he has come to Karas from Mgolume? No, the person is looking for work, and it is Namibia for everyone. So I think we need at national level to grow up from this tribal immaturity and start thinking differently. Because when somebody is making a statement about us, you know, black people are too much here, we want to be up in arms, and we say it's racism. But we are being tribal on a professional level. And even, you know, the Teachers Union of Namibia saying that without statistics. That's not correct. So we need to understand the dynamics of employment and the dynamics of job seeking. That the reality and the truth is what I have observed, and I might not be correct 100%, but this is my observation. You can debunk it 100%. I give you 100% permission to do that. But one thing I've discovered is that other tribes tend to choose where they should work. So, and Oshwambo people, Vambos, don't choose. Vambo can travel from Ruakana to Roshpina for a cleaning work. They don't care where the job is. As long as they can reach there, they will come. So if you don't come, you are in the proximity. And how do you want to say a certain tribe is dominating?
Yes, morning, Master Franz.
Morning.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm okay too.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me start with our education. This mismatch and the way we are working in Salo when it comes to education and job creation. Master Francis, the problem now, when you check even our standards, unit standards, it's not talking to current situation, what is happening. At the current market or current economy global wise. I think we are too far behind with everything. You talk about our technology, you talk about things which we are doing. Really like we are so much in the 1960s 1974, the people in somewhere around 2000, we have so much gap between us. And it is what is creating us not going to be in Bremen anyway. And that's why you see much of Namibian, unless you start somewhere, then this country they can keep you. But that is for you and Namibian here to get a job, maybe like in Nigeria or South Africa. This is what I can do. We talk about your teacher. How many teachers we have here? Why is it not being demanded by another country? This is the problem I think we are creating employment with you. I mean, we are creating education which is not meeting our standard living. Look at our CEO, how many of them been studying in Namibia? Only few. But most majority are people who've been studying outside. So I think when it comes to education, we need really to come up with a new strategy. You talk about like now, if you look, we are having more people even than graduating from VTC, but we are not accepting those people, especially when it comes to government level. Those people, they can get a job there in the private sector, there and there, but when it comes to our government, they are not really using these people because of the tenders which we are awarding to people. I don't say, I cannot say it's wrong to give a tender, but some of these tenders are unnecessary. Just imagine you are having a broken toilet which can just replaced by an artisan who's attached to that hospital. But now you wait until 6 months, 8 months, that toilet broken, that will be tendered so somebody can come and fix it. And when you are tendering that process, just a toilet pot, you have to bring the board member in for tendering. So all those board members, they have to be paid their sitting allowance, isn't it? So we are wasting money in a lot of ways, which is about to create a job. And when you look, I see a lot of people are placing the Minister of Transport. It's good indeed the job he's doing. But what kind of job Minister of Transport and work they do? Apart from not also tendering, giving the job away. But those days, Minister of Transport used to be like the one who are dealing with you in hospital, school stuff. That's what I'm saying. The way we are moving from practical to theory, we are it's too much. Because today, we are proud to have agriculture in the shelf of the shop. Agriculture in the fridge. That's why we are not, like now, instead of me, if I go to the north, instead of me to go and take earth and go and chop the wood, I later go and buy charcoal. You see?
You go and chop wood where? You have finished all the trees. You only have the palm trees, and yandi, and the, you know, those ones you cannot make firewood out of it because they burn to ashes immediately.
Yeah, they are bad. But we still have some. But the problem only that day, when things are become available to you, you feel like it's a waste of time for me to go and chop the wood and the energy.
You don't just chop the wood now, they will arrest you, the Minister of Environment.
You see now. And that's the problem. And that's why I'm telling you, Jamaica, France, that's why we cannot survive anymore if you get lost. But those days, it doesn't know like where to can find the water, even you are in the forest. You know how to survive, whatever to eat. But I'm telling you, if you're having a son who's telling you, no, me, I don't want to commit this sin because you told him to go and slaughter the goat. So the way we are moving, I'm telling you, we are moving in the dangerous place. I mean, we are waiting for a dangerous situation. Because since we
he does not want to commit sin. What church is that?
By slaughtering the goat. We told him that, okay, kill that goat.
What church is that?
Not a church.
Hmm.
Mm-mm. You tell the boy, young boy, okay, you let me say you bought a goat for Christmas. Then you went to for shopping, then you say, okay, guys, can I find you slaughter that goat so we can have a meat? He's telling you, no, I don't want to commit a sin.
Just bring it to me, I will cut it, I'll cut the throat. Before you know it, the throat is gone, the head is off.
No, it's a sin, huh? The boy doesn't want to commit sin. That is the problem I think we are heading. And I'm telling you, with the master Florence, when you look at the word, that's why we call them boys. When he's 17 already, he know how to hunt. Do you know that when you're hunting, there's a call with the camus? That's why we say that quiet to ask the law or pro hunting. Why? So it will encourage you for you to have more. Now the bird are nowhere to be found. But you want to tell me the bird those days when we used to hunt them, they used to give birth. Maybe they also are using contraceptive now. Why? So if you see it, it's Master Franklin. Then I'm saying like now we are having your crowd of cattle. But if you never even took one just to supply, let me say maybe like you are turning 70 just to kill one. Those cattle, they will just stay the same. Maybe they give one a year birth. But once you are selling all slaughtering, I'm telling you that they will be producing more. It's what I noticed also that animals also that maybe they know how to control themselves. But I'm telling you, Master Franz, seriously, I think when it comes to our education, we need to go back to our way we used to have a need to work in the school. In my time, my friend, we even
the heads,
yeah. We used to do it in school. I remember those days we used to okahead But these days, my friend, and the girls, they used to also to have those who need to work up for Why our government there to stop that?
It's clay.
No way to be found. Yeah, clay, yeah. Huh? And now these days there's nothing. Where we supposed to have our grade 4 or grade 5 building even a robot these days. But there's nothing. We are teaching. We are still using the same method which our people find themselves in the street and they don't know what to do anymore. And the people who try to go to extent of what? Having theory and the practical, we don't want to embrace them. So what I'm telling you, especially in Namibia, I don't know. We are plowing money in the dam which we can never fill up. That is the Minister of Education. Seriously, we don't really get the result we're supposed to get it.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's the problem. I think we need to do something. Okay, quickly to tribalism. Just 1 minute. I think when it comes to tribalism in Namibia, we used to be okay, but somehow things are starting moving up. But sometimes you can say the Vambus are dominating, but that is, I think, only because they are majority. And they are, as we are just everywhere. But the problem which I think we notice is that, yes, it's indeed, it doesn't look good when you're having a one of the government, SOAs, dominated by one tribe. Which is true. It doesn't look good because we support to have an inclusive system where everybody can join in. That's why we are having the other time minister complaining about road authority. Because they all the senior position in one tribe. And again, if you look at the one city police, the same. One tribe is the one who dominating that minister of, city police. All the seniors are from one tribe. Maybe they mix up only there and there, but mostly you can see, Kwame they give them most city police. That's all what I want to contribute.
All right. Okay. Yeah, you see, that's what I'm saying. Brambles will say, no, you know, this all is just full of mbajas. It's just mbajas that are there. Oh no, this one is just full of ndongas. Just ndongas that are there. No, this one is just full of kwambis. Huh? Guys, inclusivity does not always produce result. Inclusivity and diversity does not mean it will produce result. So in my realistic little wisdom, I would really say if people are performing, leave them. If people are performing, if one tribe is in Nitko and they are performing, you want the diversity to come and do what? To come and kill you see? You want them to be diversified for what? Just for the sake of inclusivity or for the sake of diversity? Or for the sake of, tribal balance? We need to grow up and identify ourselves. Who is good at what? And let everyone do their work. So, we need to stop this tribal, alarm. We need to stop this tribal, immature sensationalism mentality. Just because you see 10 kwambis in an organization, you want to say that the whole organization is just made up of 10 kwambis. Of kwambis. If the people are performing, why do we want to remove them? Why do we want to disturb the flow? You see, why do we want to disturb the flow? Some jobs, sometimes it's merit. When, you see, I remember in the 90s until somewhere in the late 2000s, who were the most people that were teaching in the north? It's people from Caprivi. It was easy for a person from Caprivi to get a job in the north. Why? Because people were convinced that people from Caprivi, they somewhat have they have education prowess. So it was easy in the 2000s for somebody from Caprivi to get a job. And there were a few complaints, of course, in radio in those days of Shwambo that were saying, no, people from Caprivi are now dominating the education sector. And it was, but many said, no, it's merit. It's not about a tribe. If a tribe has the knowledge, necessary skill that is needed, let that tribe be given the opportunity to help everyone. That's why we are not moving forward. Because we are self-destructive. With these terminologies of inclusivity and diversity. Diversity and inclusivity do not always produce fruit or do not guarantee performance. I agree with the chairperson of this standing committee that people should learn to balance between these three. You balance inclusivity and diversity with performance and merits. See whether they correlate. If not, then if Kwambis are good at a certain, you know, aspect in a company, then find all the Kwambis and give them that work. We need to grow beyond tribe. That tribal fake pride, it is the reason why we will be stuck. Because we do not want to acknowledge that there are certain people that are good at this work and not us. And all we can do is perhaps to learn from them. We need to come to that level where we recognize that they are good people, the people are good at this work. If it is a tribe in Namibia that is good at construction, find everyone from that tribe, give them the construction sector, let them run it. You know, sometimes I think we just run out of what to say. And then we just create unnecessary drama. This is unnecessary drama from TUN. This one is unnecessary drama from TUN. You know, sometimes I feel like we just want to make statements. Just for the sake of making statements. We don't think about the statement we make. We just want to make statement. It goes on the newspaper, and that's it. I'm on the newspaper, and I said this. So let's not say things in for the sake of saying things because we are in front of cameras. We are becoming self-destructive with this tribal intoxication. This is a tribal intoxication. A mentality that we need to grow, you know, we need to grow out of. This is a cancer that we need to heal from. And stop seeing ourselves as hereros, as whatevers. We need to learn to start seeing ourselves as Namibians. This is a thing that has corrupted most people from Zambezi. This tribal intoxication. So it is a serious brand of expired dacha that we need to quit smoking. Because it does not take us anywhere. When you are seated next to the people, when you know, the first thing you want to know is which tribe is he? That's a corrosive mentality. It's a corrosive mentality. It's a backward mentality. And if we have people in the senior positions who are still thinking like this, then we are headed for a dangerous end. Morning.
Morning, Tate France.
Yes, sir.
How are you today?
Good. How are you, sir?
Good.
Yes.
Tribalism versus a performance.
Yeah.
Tate France, I'm in the South. and it's quite interesting. When you look at performance versus the tribal person, tribalism. Before I start on that, I remember there's one of the Namibian artists, a musician, who said that she grew up in Valdez, and she finds it funny when people are becoming tribalist, because when she grew up in Valdez, they belong to the community, and they play with all the kids from the community, and she knows that this auntie Tani Hu from next door, or maybe three houses away, if they see me not messing up, they will discipline me, and my mother will say, thank you for disciplining this child. Because he said, I belong to the community, and we never looked at each other as I'm from this particular tribe, even though that's the language you speak at home. We are Hereros, we are Damaras, we are Oshuambo speaking, but when we are together, we do not see those. There was never none of those barriers. And I think we grew up with so much of that barrier that wherever we go, we try to implement them.
No, you know, with children, the children know no boundary when it comes to tribe. It is us parents that still are, you know, smoking that blend of expired tribal dacha. And we enforce it on our children.
That's why Nelson Mandela says that hating is actually taught. And we teach we start dividing people based upon who they are. And then we start wondering why we're not moving forward in the first place. I remember someone asking me that, oh, but your nephew, he likes to play with those children. I'm like, what do you mean those children? Like those, like none, those that are not of our tribe. And I remember, and then even when it comes to different tribalism, even in Oshuambo, we also have those barriers amongst ourselves.
Of course.
This one's a tattoo, which I know. This one's a... We can't even intermarry. This or what? Is a Kwanyama? No. Kwanyama from where? Or is Ndonga? Yes. We are all Ndongas, but Ndongas from where? Which part of Ndonga? Oh, no. Is Oshuambo speaking? Yeah. Oh, Mbwiti. No, Mbwitis are... No, why did you pick Mbwiti? Well, Mbwiti, they're also saying that, no, why did you pick Mbwiri? So there are always these funny names that we are calling each other at the end of the day. But are they progressive or not? At the end of the day, those are the questions that we should ask ourselves. Because if a person is able to I like what Tate Kwedi says. It doesn't matter the color of the cat. Can the cat catch mouse? Can the cat catch mouse? If it's able to at what to meet its objective, that's what's important. And I think if certain people are diligent. Try to learn from them and become much more diligent as well. If certain people have certain qualities, let's try to emulate them. But I don't think we should now try to put ourselves into groups based upon our tribes just because we think, because every tribe or every people always think that they are better than others. It's a pity that we think that way. And I think we need to start moving away from those kind of mentality, because I always tell people that as long as the person does not break the constitution, and he also does not break God's law, what is wrong with the person's free way of living at the end of the day? Because I live in the South, whereby when you look in Oranjemund, it's predominantly Oshuambo people, and then during the contract labor, they were actually taken far away to come work here at the end of the day. And people will say, yeah, but Oranjemund is just full of Oshuambo people. When other people came in, they will also say, now it's our time now, like they've been deprived of the town. But they did also come there by themselves. They were brought there after through the contract labor system. So what we should ask ourselves, why were they chosen above others as far as our contract labor system is concerned. And I'm also, when you look at Rospina, Rospina is also quite different as well. When you come here, they also want to know that, they want to know your voter's card and whether you are from the region yourself and your residence and you're not just a newcomer before being considered for employment. They have these politics. And I understand they need to protect your community and wanting to make sure that employment goes to your people first, those out of the region. I completely agree with that. But I think sometimes we should also not take people that are non-performance over those that are able to perform just because they are from my tribe or just because they are from the region. So we must make sure that people of quality or that are of skills must first be searched within the community. When the community cannot provide them, then we can outsource and accept that we can those that actually come, we must also accept that they are also bringing goodness to our community, because when they come in that community and work there, they are not taking their money away. They are spending their money in that particular community in which they live in, also contributing to the what? To the value and the economic power of that particular community at the end of the day. And the more people that actually come in that community because of employment, the more also the other benefits, because now they're also hiring domestic workers and people who are going to babysit their children, and also that are going to rake their yard. And the barbers as well is going to have more people whose hair is going to cut. I think we need to look at it in that particular direction, Mr. Franz. But let me not take more of your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Look, we need to grow up. That's the only thing I can say. We need in Namibia to grow up. Because this thing of tribal intoxication, it's a backward mentality, and it's even embarrassing coming out of a senior person. So we need to grow up. That's the only word I'm ending with as far as this is concerned. We need to grow up. So this has been the addition of unpacking, and we are going to meet again on Monday. That is going to be, the last edition of this month before we call in September. I don't know what gender September is. I don't know how tall September is, or maybe how short it is, but we are going to determine that when he comes. I don't know whether September is a he or she or a they or a them. But whatever he is, or whatever they are, welcome in advance. So please, one word I leave for you, two words, it's grow up.